What are contractors most worried about at this point with respect to the $350 billion in cuts already approved?
Well, this is the Budget Control Act number that would bring down the defense budget by that much over 10 years. Problem is that there are already cuts that the Defense Department has committed to. So the actual number is somewhere between $460 and $480 billion dollars cut from the defense budget. That's a huge number. And really, it puts the Defense Department back, you know, back against the wall in these budget cuts, because if there is any further money put on the table, I don't know that we will see the defense department in our country able to manage the kind of national security capabilities that we really take for granted right now. There are a huge number of jobs involved in the defense and aerospace industry. We calculate that more than 1 million people are employed there. And the fact of the matter is the sales in the industry are $331 billion. A lot of it export. We contribute very heavily to a positive trade balance when it comes to manufacturing and defense. All of that's at risk in this.
So when you were talking about more than 1 million people employed, was that specifically the aerospace industry? Was also, but it also folds into the rest of the defense contractor world?
That is the aerospace and defense world. That is the private sector world. But when you count direct and indirect jobs, you know, all those people who are employed because there is a defense factory in the town, all the people who have jobs because of the economic spinoff, it's more like 2.9 million. It's a huge number.
That's actually where I was going with it. And I was wondering about those cuts. And are you able to quantify how the impact will hit those people? Is it possible to even say?
Well, it depends on, of course, how they allocate the cuts. In other words, does it go to largely to research and the procurement acquisition programs where people are actually out there around the country in factories making things, or does it go more to the operations and maintenance of the troops? Those are decisions that Congress has to make, and it does affect the numbers. But I can tell you that there will be hundreds of thousands of people laid off, and these are good, high-paying jobs. So this is something that in an economy where we're trying to create jobs just doesn't make any sense at all.
Now, some of the ways the Pentagon is cutting to meet the mandates is to reduce the quantities of things like aircraft, new airplanes that it buys. And so what's the multiplier effect? What if they were going to buy 50 of a certain plane and now they're going to buy only 25 of it, whatever the number is, and say the F-35 quantities are being cut back? How does that ripple beyond the prime contractor?
Well, it ripples down to a lot of smaller suppliers. One of the interesting things about the defense business is that you think in terms of big companies, Boeing, Lockheed, Northrop. They are supported by hundreds and hundreds of smaller suppliers who may employ, you know, only 100 people in their factory. And they often make a specific thing that they're the one or two companies in the country, maybe in the world, that can supply it. When that is cut back, when there is a delay and they say, well, we're not doing that this year, those people have nowhere to go except into a different field, because they can't sustain a business when the one thing that they do or the two or three parts that they make are that reduced down to a very small number or not at all.
So the concern is that they are so specialized, they're stuck.
Exactly. And there's a lot of, as you would expect, highly specialized work that goes into amazing high technology machines, which is what the defense industry manufactures. So this is not really like the average part of the commercial economy. And it does have real impact on the defense industrial base over time, because when those companies go away, they are unlikely to come back. And then later when we say, wait a minute, we need to ramp up again, we're going to have more fighters, or we're going to have to begin to make the Abrams tank again, it's not reasonable to expect that you can then just turn and find people who long since were furloughed, scientists, engineers who went off into a different field, to come back and then to begin reactivating that part of the economy. And remember again, this is high technology that keeps the United States with an unlevel playing field when we go into the battlefield. It's the thing that has protected us in Iraq and Afghanistan, and these are very high-paying jobs. So losing our technological edge at this point when China and other countries are ramping up is dangerous, and it is certainly very dangerous to create a economic deficit in this area because these are valuable long-term, really for your career jobs.
We're speaking with Marion Blakey, President and CEO of the Aerospace Industries Association, former FAA Administrator. And earlier you were talking about readiness and the ability to meet whatever defense challenges the country may have. And I read just the other day about the age of the aerospace fleet that DOD operates, the Air Force and so forth, and some of the planes, people's grandchildren, the same pilot family, are on the third generation flying the exact same airplane and this kind of thing. And so does the industry feel, we often hear defense officials saying that the aging of the fleet is a readiness problem and a defense problem. Do the contractors feel safe in saying that kind of thing out loud, or does it look too self-serving?
No, I don't think it's self-serving because, frankly, we're all in it together for the protection of the country. And it's simply a fact. It's not something that's debatable that a lot of our aircraft are more than 50 years old. Our tankers are more than 50 years old. We're flying World War II in a few cases, certainly Korea and Vietnam era aircraft. And frankly, with the kind of cycle time that we've had to put on equipment in Iraq and Afghanistan, a lot of it's wearing out. So there's a real need to simply replace equipment as well as to move forward with technologies and R&D that really will keep our children safe in the future. You know, we have always been second to none as a country when it comes to being able to protect ourselves and our allies. That's the reason that the Aerospace Industries Association has mounted a campaign called Second to None, because we really want to drive home at this point that the Congress, the administration, the American public cannot take for granted this sector of our economy that provides for our national defense. We really want them to understand that it is a technological edge that has protected us up until now, and you have to invest in it. R&D has to move forward, or you really do lose out to others. And the United States is not used to being second to anyone when it comes to the protection of our citizens, when it comes to our spacefaring programs, and frankly, when it comes to things like our airspace. The United States, with the FAA, has always had a wonderful system, but it's aging, and it needs to move forward as well. And all of these kinds of investments are in jeopardy, and they are infrastructure, and they're the protection of our citizens. So this is baseline stuff the Constitution requires us to do.
Just one final note of the advice that you might have for those contractors who are listening to this and who are wondering, well, what do I do? What happens next? How would someone like that with those specialized skills prepare for possible layoffs or freezes or cutbacks?
Well, I think it's simply two things. One is do your job best possible, because we want to deliver the best value for the taxpayer, and all of us have to realize that as we're able to achieve better efficiencies, more cost efficiency and more productivity, that stretches the dollars that are there further and reassures the Congress. But the second thing is be sure you let the Congress know what it is you make, why it is important, what are the skills, and what are the research projects that you're working on that are important. We can't expect people to understand what this industry delivers if we're silent about it. It's an obligation to speak up and to talk about what we do, to write, to call, to make sure that when there's an opportunity to speak to one of our elected officials who's got to make tough decisions. I mean, this debt environment is a very hard environment in which to choose where to make choices for the budget. But we cannot expect people to understand and appreciate what's important in this field, in defense and in aerospace, unless we speak up and make sure that people understand that we're in jeopardy of no longer being second to none in the United States if we do not continue to invest.